proceeded to cite every instance in which she had voted against him. She was amazed that the chief executive of a multi-billion-dollar corporation could remember each and every vote. She'd even forgotten some of them. And he'd always gotten what he wanted, her occasional votes to the contrary notwithstanding. This struck her as petty and vindictive, and she said something that she knew would wound him. "Why don't you show you can lead this company without Frank Wells?" Eisner flushed in anger. "It's a done deal. The nominating committee has met and has decided not to renominate you," Eisner said. "I want you to go on the Disney Foundation board, and I want it to be your idea," he continued, urging her to resign from the Disney board to take up the new post. "If not, this will be embarrassing to you and to me." Van de Kamp felt her anger rising. Had Eisner simply said he wanted her to leave, she would have stepped down. But he had badly misjudged her if he thought she could be threatened or intimidated. "I'm not embarrassed," she said sharply, rising to leave. "I don't want you talking about this to anyone, including other directors," he warned her. "If you do talk to anyone, I request that you call me." When she reached her office in Beverly Hills, Van de Kamp was still shaken by the encounter. Despite Eisner's injunction, she sat down and typed an email describing what had just happened and sent it to all her fellow directors. Apart from Roy and Gold, only Bowers responded, calling to say that she was horrified by Eisner's pressure tactics. Van de Kamp contacted a lawyer to see if she had any grounds to sue Eisner, but he couldn't find any. As the January 28th meeting approached, there was a flurry of calls among directors concerned that Van de Kamp was being purged as a warning to any director who dared question Eisner or sometimes vote against him. Bowers in particular lobbied other directors on Van de Kamp's behalf. Tom Murphy, Ray Watson, Sidney Poitier, and Gary Wilson expressed some sympathy for Van de Kamp's plight, but no one else did, or if they were sympathetic, they didn't dare speak up. Other than telling her she was a terrible director, Eisner never told Van de Kamp why she wasn't being renominated. But others told her the reason Eisner volunteered was that she faced a conflict of interest since Disney had given money to the Walt Disney Concert Hall and she was chairman of the Music Center. Van de Kamp was amazed. The Disney gift predated her service on the board, and there had been no Disney gifts since then. Indeed, it was because of her skill in securing the donation that Eisner had asked her to join the board. Even Ira Milstein had conceded when the issue arose in December that she was independent, and some of her recent votes certainly confirmed that. Van de Kamp had a legal opinion confirming that she was independent within the meaning of proposed rule changes. The night before the board meeting, Gold called Van de Kamp. "This is going to get ugly tomorrow," he warned. "You can still avoid this if you take the bribe of the foundation job and go quietly." Van de Kamp looked over at her 22-year-old daughter. What kind of example did she want to set? She felt she was being attacked for trying to do the right thing. Someone had to stand up to Eisner's bullying. "I can't do it, Stanley," she said. For Van de Kamp, the next day began with a 7:30 breakfast meeting of the Finance Committee. No one